Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
Well, hi, Miss Laura. This is Kate Hensler. I'm actually here on time tonight. I'm a developmental interventionist from Louisville, Kentucky, with the First Steps program. How are you?
I'm good. How about that music? I think our problems are over with that.
Perfect.
That was perfect.
The best one ever.
I know, you know, and I realized that it might have been me messing it up for, 2 years now when I would try to restart it, and it's an automatic start. So go figure.
Oh.
I know. I am in a really kind of weird mood tonight because I am had a little back shoulder injury, and so I'm taking some medicine for that, so I'm a little loopier than normal, but we decided to proceed with the show anyway, so hopefully we will make it through. And I do want to say before we get started that today is my 24th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations. My husband
Thank you.
Was 24 years of marital bliss.
Aww. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm
still Johnny all day, so.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead.
I was just going to say some of the silly things I've said to Johnny all day. You know how he jokes just about our just kind of back and forth, our witty repertoire, as a friend of ours used to say all the time. And today I was telling him it's a little bit like being married to Gary Busey sometimes. Are you watching Celebrity Apprentice? Do you know how he's been so, Gary Busey has been kind of just out there sometimes. Sometimes that's how I feel in real life. So anyway, this is not going very well. I need to rein it in a little bit, I think.
Okay.
I'll be deleting this show probably. I wonder if we have anybody listening live.
Don't say that. It'll be fine.
Thank you very much. Yes, I need to announce the Tennessee dates are Wednesday, May 18th in Chattanooga, Thursday, May 19th in Knoxville, and Friday, May 20th in Nashville. Please come hear me, especially Chattanooga. We haven't had as many registrants for that as we have for Knoxville and Nashville, so I'm hoping that our Chattanooga friends just come on through. Do you have any announcements, Kate? Do you want to update us on the Dream House?
Well, we think we have a tentative closing date this Friday.
Yay! That's awesome.
I didn't know there's a difference between, like, closing and then moving in. We need, they call it a certificate of occupancy, and we may or may not get that by Friday, but it's been really coming along. Everything inside is pretty much done. A few little detail things, and then outside work, and anyway.
Well, when I saw it last Monday, it is gorgeous. It is just beautiful. I'm so excited for you and so happy for your family.
Well, thank you. But anyway, so we're going to be closing, I think, this Friday, and I would say we'll be in by the end of April. So, I had to divulge my little secret with my builder because he basically nailed me and said, I thought we were shooting for the 11th. Oh, well, I guess I didn't mention it, but we did get a different loan, and so we really have till the end of April. He didn't say
busted.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, I was like, well, sorry, but I knew I couldn't say it, or you would have helped me till the end of April. So anyway, it's all working out, and we will be closing, I think, this Friday, barring any unforeseen issues that might arise, but it's very, very, very close, and it's looking great. We now have plants. We have landscaping. We
Yay.
Have our beautiful brick steps out front. So it's really come along. I'm happy to say we'll live there very soon.
Can you believe it? It feels like it's been a dream, doesn't it? A long dream.
They never end. A year, my birthday's the end of April, and we should be in the end of April, and that's when we broke ground, was the end of April. So it'll be a year, which I guess talking to other people isn't so horrible, but when your builder tells you 8 months, a year feels like a really long time. So.
Well, and when you live it, it always feels like it's taking forever. Any project that's of any magnitude feels like that by the end. So congratulations. I'm so excited for you.
Well, thank you. Speaking of big
projects,
how is your book coming along?
I finished the rewrites, my final rewrites, on Friday, I'm happy to say. So we should start pre-sale in about 2 weeks. So
yay.
I am giddy about that. And the book, the concept has changed a little. It was supposed to be a book strictly about toys, and then it kind of morphed into a book about goals and kind of philosophy and an overall how-to book with toys kind of the ending section. And now the toys section has kind of morphed into its own book. So this Teach Me to Talk, the therapy manual, is really going to be just about developing a philosophy about working with young children, working the hierarchy that I talk about in my conferences for professionals, you know, what you should target first and second and third, and then it kind of goes into goals and what's developmentally appropriate and when you should work on what and in what order, because, you know, I believe that that's what happens a lot with therapists in early intervention is they don't really go in with a plan. They just kind of go in with mom and dad wanted to talk more, but they don't really think much about it beyond that.
Right.
And it requires a little more forethought than that. So this is a book about establishing that hierarchy and, again, knowing what to work on first and what's important and some what's not important and kind of how to work on things in the right order so that you're efficient and don't waste time. So I'm very, very excited about it. There is a final section on activities, but it's not the whole toy book is what I thought this was going to start out to be. So that's going to be another little project that should be pretty easy to wrap up since it's written. The problem is it's just too long. It's too big to make one manual. So we've split it into two, but the first part should be, again, on pre-sale in about 2 weeks. So if anybody still hasn't, still wants to take advantage of getting that pre-sale coupon, which you'll be able to save $8 or $10 from the regular price, be sure to email me this week at laura@teachmetotalk.com because probably by next week we might be running that offer because in the next week is when the pre-sale period starts. And we always do that before we have a DVD or book come out. We have about 2, 3, 4 weeks where you can buy it at a discount, and then the first day it's available, all those orders that have come in during that pre-sale ship on that first day. So that's an exciting day around here, a busy day when the pre-sale ones finally ship. So I'm sure this one's going to be an even bigger one than we've done before. So I'm so excited about that, and thanks for asking about that. But that's nearing the end too, which it is exciting after you've worked and worked and worked and worked and worked on something for months and then have it come together. It's pretty exciting.
Well, congratulations.
All right. I'm sorry, what?
I said, well, congratulations.
Thanks. I don't have my normal sense of timing tonight. Sorry about that. I feel like I'm interrupting you and stepping all over you, so sorry.
Okay.
I obviously don't have very much of a filter tonight either, so anyway, moving right along. Let's talk about the question that we were going to talk about last week, but we ended up talking about your question with your little girl that you see for therapy and that word list and how we select words for targets. And if you have a little update about her, maybe you can squeeze that in at the end today with if you have anything exciting to report from your session this past week. But the other question that we were hoping to do last week, we didn't get to at all, and it's from a speech pathologist from Australia, and her name is Emma, and she has written me an email. She says, "Hi, Laura, my name is Emma, and I'm a speech pathology student from Australia. I've really enjoyed the tips on your site and was wondering if you could spare 5 minutes to provide some practical advice. I'm currently working with a cute little guy who's 2 years, 9 months, and who has pretty good receptive language but is not so great about putting words together. I'm working on building his utterance length at the moment around the theme of zoo animals. I'm feeling just a little bit stuck for activities and was wondering if you have done anything before that may have been similar. I appreciate that you're super busy, but your help would be much appreciated. Thanks again, Emma." So, Emma has asked if I have ever used zoo animals before, and absolutely. I think animals are a fun kind of go-to toy that we use a lot with therapy, but there's the problem with working with zoo animals, with late talkers, is that so many of their names are phonetically complex, meaning that they have some pretty difficult sound combinations. Most of those names are multisyllabic, like elephant. Even ones that are like zebra, words that are two syllables, still are pretty challenging for lots of our late-talking little friends to use. But this little boy must love zoo animals is why she's trying to pick that as her therapy material. So we want to try to give her some different ideas with that. Before we start with that, though, let's just talk about what the rules are for combining words into phrases, because she says that that's her number one goal with him. Is to get those words into phrases. So before you even start looking at what materials you want to use, you want to be sure that a child has the prerequisites to be able to combine single words into phrases. And the first one is that his vocabulary size be large enough. And research generally tells us that children have to have close to 50 words before they're ready to start to combine words into phrases. So if you have a kid that you're working with now, or if your child doesn't have those 50 words, then it's really too soon to start to work on phrases. And so many times moms kind of jump the gun on this, and this is the example I use in the conferences. You know, a kid will be able to say bye-bye and daddy, so what does mom want him to say? She wants him to say bye-bye, dada, you know, right off the bat without having more words in his vocabulary. So don't jump the gun on that, because it's going to make it too hard. It's just too early. If he doesn't have close to 50 words that he says on his own, she's going to want to build that single word vocabulary. She can still do it with zoo animals. She can still use that as her material that she would target that with, but she would just work on making sure that he had enough single words first before she worked on combining those into phrases. Do you want to jump in and say anything?
Well, I kind of already acknowledged behind the scenes that I am not a huge zoo animal person. And I think that's because I work a lot out in kind of rural, not necessarily Louisville, but kind of on the outskirts, and farm animals are much more relevant. And
they're out in the yard sometimes when you're working on those farm animals.
I've had pigs greet me. I've had goats greet me. Literally come up and try and eat my bag.
So
I tend to do a lot more farm. I don't even know that. I mean, I have a few little scattered zoo animal things, but way more farm animal stuff, and I think that's just my interpretation of this is more relevant. Kids see horses and cows and pigs and
right.
All those ducks, and they're everywhere where I work, and I'm not going to say they don't ever get to the zoo. Occasionally they do, but, you know, maybe once a year. And I kind of think, well, if I'm having trouble teaching them cow and horse or getting that to stick, I don't know that alligator and zebra and giraffe are relevant.
Yeah.
So I don't. I have some, but I don't have that much. So that's kind of my own prejudice. And not that I don't like them, but I just don't.
Right.
Think it's,
you know, I play with zoo animals a lot, and it could be because she is in situations where she's talking about with this little boy. He has normal receptive language, so his interests are really maturing right now because he's getting closer and closer to three.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's when I use them a lot with my kids that I've seen for a long time whose language is moving along. Now, I can't say that unless a kid really exhibited an activity preference for zoo animals that I would use them with a little boy who's not already doing lots of phrases first, because I think unless he just had kind of an affinity for that and that's just what he wanted to play and that's what he was highly motivated by and really, really interested in, I don't know that I would have picked zoo animals when he's not yet at phrases.
He's from Australia, so it may be that what we consider zoo animals here are really kind of everyday occurrences for them, you know.
Well, and that's a great point.
They have them.
And
but.
She's a student, too. So this might be a particular assignment that she's gotten. And she sent this to me the first week of April. She's probably long done with this assignment by the time we've gotten around to answering it. But, you know, there could be lots of different factors. But if anyone else is kind of thinking about that and wondering what her materials choice, why she chose that, you know, it could be any number of reasons. I've used zoo animals a lot, and I use them a lot, too, when I ran that play group program that I had, because we used a theme-based approach. You know, I had some DIs that worked for me, and then me and, you know, a couple other speech pathologists, and we used kind of a theme approach like preschool. And so zoo animals, that was a regular unit that we did every year. And lots of my clientele usually have those, you know, East End driven mommies who go to the zoo and have the zoo membership. So it usually is something that, you know, lots of kids that I've seen go pretty regularly.
Right.
So I've played with zoo animals a lot. One of my favorite things to do with zoo animals were, first of all, let's just talk about our other little activity choices that we could do. And then I need to go back, and there's a few other little things that I want to finish when we're let me do that first. Boy, I'm having a hard time staying organized tonight. We already said that the kid needed 50 words or close to it spontaneously before she starts working on phrases. The other thing he needs to be able to do is sequence two syllables. So if she has, if her little guy is still leaving off the last or first syllable in a word, if he's doing lots of things, like for blanket, if he's still saying, you know, buy for blanket, or for Elmo, if he's still saying Mo or F for Elmo and is not able to sequence two syllables together, she needs to hold off on working on phrases. So that would be another kind of prerequisite that she would want to look at before he's ready to do phrases. The other thing she needs to look at is the depth of his vocabulary. So many times a kid will have lots and lots of, or, you know, close to that 50-word mark, but his vocabulary be chiefly nouns, you know, and when you start looking at that, you can do some two-word combinations with nouns, you know, daddy's shoe, mommy's car, you know, baby's hat. You can do some phrases with two nouns, but you need to have some variety with your vocabulary so that he's able to make lots of variations with phrases. So a lot of times you need to start analyzing his vocabulary, making sure that he has some verbs, that he has some pronouns, that he has some prepositions, so that he has some options for making phrases, because it's pretty common for kids, even typically developing children, to have mostly nouns in their vocabulary. So before you start looking at lots of phrases, sometimes, you know, kids don't have enough words to be able to do more than a couple of different combinations when you're actually looking at, you know, nouns versus verbs versus prepositions, blah, 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 blah. You think about that even from your perspective, Kate, as a DI, about whether your kids are ready to do phrases, right?
Absolutely. And I think thanks to my years of your tutelage, I start early on with words other than nouns, and I do think you're right.
Right.
That typically developing language kids do tend to, you know, they use one word to mean a whole phrase. They say cookie, and
right.
They really mean, I want another cookie or more cookies or... So that's very typical. I think because, like I said, I've learned from the master, I tend to push some verbs early on that seem to be winners with kids that just like certain verbs, and they're simple,
right.
And they're everyday things that kids do anyway. And so I think probably my average child that I see has a little bit more variability in the types of words
right.
They get early on, because I push different words than kids necessarily. I mean, you know what I mean? That I have some additional
emphasis. You've worked on it purposefully in therapy, yeah.
Yes, because I've seen that happen. I think earlier on in my career, I kind of maybe went with their lead a little bit more on that, and that's exactly what happened. They were label, and there are those label kids who they are
right.
Pretty good at labeling, but it's hard to do too much beyond. I mean, you gave some examples. It's not impossible, but... It kind of makes more sense if they have a variety of class of words and they can combine those into phrases that are functional for them. So, but yes,
exactly.
I do think about that. I don't know that I would have come to that on my own accord, but thanks to you, I knew to do that a long time ago. So I do.
Yeah, and I think that that's an important thing, and a lot of times a student may not have looked at a kid's vocabulary like that. They just think, okay, he's not talking very much, and he never uses phrases, so let's go for phrases without really looking at what some of those prerequisite skills are. So that's what I wanted to really address before we even kind of moved on with that. Okay, I was trying to pull up the little article I have on the website. It's called Making the Leap from Words to Phrases, and it's on my website at teachmetotalk.com, but my computer has stopped. It's completely, it won't come up. Maybe I can get some technical assistance on that. It's in expressive language, Making the Leap from Words to Phrases. And so that article on the website, if anybody wants to take a look at that, would be a good reference for knowing if a child is ready to move on to phrases. So take a look at that. And I was going to make sure I had talked about all of those prerequisite things before we move on to activities. But I think we're just going to keep moving on because my computer won't come up. Okay, now we're here. Yep, make sure we've done the vocabulary size, words from different grammatical categories. A kid needs to be able to sequence two syllables together. One thing that we talk about too, and that this is pretty technical maybe for parents to think about, is that a child needs to be able to say several different types of syllable structures. And we talk about this during the conference too. And Kate, I'm sure you think about it as well. If you have a kid that can only do, say, consonant vowel syllables, all of his words, you know, ma for mama, da for dada, meh for milk, you know, it's all a consonant vowel, but he doesn't have any other kinds of syllable structures, he's going to have a hard time moving on to phrases because he would be really, really difficult to understand. And I think this is what happens a lot of times when we have kids who are trying to talk, but their intelligibility is so bad. You were talking about that last week with a little girl that we were talking about as our topic for last week's show, in that her mom said she's trying to say a lot, but her intelligibility stinks.
Right.
So mom can't always understand what she's saying. And this is the reason why a lot of times a kid might not be able to start a word that begins with a vowel, or he might not be able to do a word with a consonant at the end, although that's not that big of a deal. Or he might not be able to combine, you know, consonant, vowel yet, so that he can't sequence those. So you want to look to make sure that the words that he's using are of lots of different syllable structure types, so that you've got some variability there as well. And then the last prerequisite that a kid would have to have before he started using phrases on his own would be that he has to be able to imitate some two-word phrases, because it's highly, highly, highly unlikely that a kid would start to do some spontaneous phrases if he has not been able to imitate any of those. So I'm hoping that she's really focused on those prerequisites and that he's able to do all of those things before she starts expecting him to be able to pop out those phrases on his own. Okay, let's move on now and talk about specific activities that she could do with zoo animals. And Kate, you've already said that you don't play with zoo animals very much, so I guess I'm kind of on my own on this one, huh?
Well, I can just switch farm animals for zoo animals and chime right in.
Yeah. I use zoo animals a lot with that Chico carousel toy, and I think you have that toy too, don't you, Kate? It's a toy that kind of looks, they look like cages to me, because there are doors on the toy and there are keys, and it always reminds me of a zookeeper or a circus animal trainer or something like that, even if I'm not maybe calling it that to the kid. That's what I liken it to, and I'll hide zoo animals in those doors, and lots of kids like keys and enjoy really matching the key to the door and then manipulating the key, and some of our kids have horrible motor planning and terrible fine motor skills, so they really need that practice, and then that's another reason for them to have to ask us for assistance, because they can't quite do the keys on their own, but it's enough of a challenge to make them want to continue to try that and play that. And I'm certain that's probably been your experience with that toy too, right?
Absolutely. It's a rare child who can get the key in the hole and turn it and get the door open. So lots of help from that. But you're right. Kids love keys, especially
right.
Little boys, I think. But girls like them too. I mean, it's just a fun thing.
Yeah, it's kind of has a universal appeal there. The other toy that's similar to this that you can use with using keys is the Animal Hospital from Parents, that Parents line of toys that you can find at Target. I think they've changed the coloring on it from the version that I have. I think there's a newer version out in cooler colors. But if you're a speech-language pathologist or a developmental interventionist like Kate and you work with toddlers, that's a winner. If you don't have a toy with keys, run out and get one of those this week because you can do lots of different things with that. You can switch the toys out, and like we were talking about, you can use the zoo animals in there. Kate, I'm sure you've put your farm animals in there. I always put my other little characters in there, like Diego and Dora and my Sesame Street characters, all different kinds of people. You can use that toy for just a variety of stimuli, I wanted to say. I was trying to think of a more practical word. To target lots of different words. Use it for a range of vocabulary. And kids never get tired of that. And if you've used, you know, one set of toys in it for a while, put it away for a few weeks. The next time you take it back to that kid's house, you're going to want to switch and have a different set of animals in there or a different set of characters so that you can use that for lots and lots of different kids. So that would be one way to use the zoo animals. Another way that I use zoo animals is I have a little set that I got at the dollar store that has a plastic mat that's with it that almost looks like the zoo. And it's such a cheesy little set, and it's real cheap, and I've probably, again, paid $2 for it, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. But I've gotten so much wear out of that little set because the kids like looking like there's a little road for their lions or tigers or monkeys to walk on, and then you walk to various places. There are different settings there. A part has some water in it, so we can pretend like the animals swim. There's a part that looks, you know, there's lots of grass, lots of trees, those kinds of things. So I've had some good luck using that little prop to play with zoo animals, too. Do you know the kind of set I'm talking about, Kate?
I do. Sometimes Walmart has them. It's just, they might be as much as $3 or $4, but they're generally very, and it's just kind of a generic set that, and they usually do come with the little mat you're describing. Yeah.
Yeah, and some kids don't like the mat, and some kids aren't really mature enough to play with the mat because they're going to kind of fixate on, you know, tearing up the plastic or whatever. But if you have a kid that's mature enough, that's a fun way to play with zoo animals, too. And then you've got other things to talk about and other things for those animals to do. I think I said to zoo, to do. Another toy that I use with zoo animals a lot is that safari-looking truck that's from, we were talking about this before the show. Is it a Geotech toy?
Geotech, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I use that a lot, and it has, now some of you listening to this will be mortified that I say it, but, you know, Kentucky is kind of a southern state and a hunting state, so moms, do not freak out that there's a little arrow on the, or a little gun on the toy, and it has a string attached so that you can put the little arrow into the mechanism there, push the button, and then it shoots. And so, again, little boys love lining those animals up and having target practice and shooting those animals with that little thing. And I always say, the zoo man has to put them in a cage and take them back to the zoo. And that particular truck comes with a cage there, so you can shoot your animal and then put it in a cage and then take it back to where you're pretending is your zoo if you're using your little mat or if you're using the carousel or the little house, some other thing. And that's the way that I've been able to get kids to really expand play to include more than just labeling the item there. You're actually going to have a little play theme where you have the zoo guy who's going to catch the animal, put it in the cage, and then take it back. And so lots of opportunities to use language there. can work on lots of different verbs there. You know, you're going to do your prepositions, but you know, you're going to put it in the cage, take it out of the cage, knock the animal down, the man has to pick him up. You know, lots and lots of opportunities there for targeting different word classes. So that's another idea that I do with the zoo animals. One other fun thing with zoo animals is to use a Rubbermaid container and fill it with either sand, which I think, again, I don't know, but I guess if you're thinking about Africa maybe or something, you might not think about sand being there, but I have lots of kids who really like to play with sand, but I always, you know, I'm not center-based anymore. I'm going into kids' homes, so I want an opportunity to be able to use that where it's less messy. So you put it in a pretty big Rubbermaid container, but not so big that you can't take it into a child's home, and, of course, something with a top, but you could hide the zoo animals in there ahead of time or have the child help you hide them. And that's always lots of fun to try to dig them out of the sand there, and then you can make them do different things in the sand. They can dig holes. Again, they can hide. They can, animals can chase each other in the sand. I don't use those kinds of sensory activities with children that are still mouthing lots of toys or throwing. You know, if I had a thrower, I wouldn't use sand or hide those kinds of toys in beans or pasta or anything, because that would be more trouble than it's worth. I think sometimes therapists use those activities out of order and might play with that sort of thing with the child when he's really not ready. Have you seen therapists struggle like that before, Kate, too?
I have. Yeah, I used to do more of that, as you said. I think, I need to get mine back out. Kids generally love that. You do have those kids who are going to stick everything in their mouths, and that's probably not great, or the throwers. But generally, kids really love the digging and the sensory feedback they get from sand or beans or whatever.
You know, and if you're a therapist that hasn't used that in a while, you'll get a lot of mileage out of that for a couple of weeks with just adding that, you know, less than $6 or $7 activity with animals that you already have. You know, you could play with that for 2 or 3 different weeks in a row, probably, with lots of children that are, you know, 2.5 or above developmentally, and they would really, really enjoy that. Sometimes I'll add a plastic spoon so that they can pretend to dig. Sometimes I have those little shovels, but I've found that if you give them the kinds of shovels that you would give them for the beach, they're going to want to dump it out on the floor, and I don't want to help the mom clean up the mess or either have the mom freaking out because we have sand all over her den. But something about giving them something smaller to scoop with, or even maybe a scoop from laundry detergent, they're not as apt to spill it or want to make as big of a mess if the tool is smaller than if you're giving them that regular size tool. So I think using those, just those little plastic throwaway spoons are a fun way to let them dig without getting too crazy and too big of a mess.
Normally kids kind of give you a warning. I've had a lot of kids over the years who start out great, and then as they play, they get a little more rambunctious and a little more rambunctious, you got to kind of read their cues and say, okay, time to put it away. You know,
done with that.
And once they kind of maybe accidentally fling it, or, you know, like they, and then they like that, and that's when it's probably time to put it away. But most kids, like you said, depending on where they are developmentally, do pretty well with that.
Yeah. Another thing that I like to do with zoo animals is if I have a kid that likes kind of crafty stuff, and again, this is what I did when we did the when I had the playgroup program, we had children bring shoe boxes, and then we took a hole punch and hole punched around the edges and let them help us do that. And so we had the holes on the tops and the bottoms of the shoe boxes, you know, if we were going to stand it up on its side. And then we took yarn and ran it through. And again, that's great fine motor practice because they're stringing, you know, and that's on every developmental test, being able to string beads or string blocks. So we let them do that, put the string through there, and then we tied it on both ends, and when you set it up, it really does look like a cage. And kids thought that was really, really fun, our higher-level kids that were developmentally, you know, 2.5 to 3, and so then you could use the zoo animals that way and play with them like that. And then a lot of times moms might not have thought to be that creative, or they didn't have you know, the material so that they have anything that looks like a cage. But if you have children that have visited the zoo, they recognize that, and they'll, that's a fun idea to do too. And then especially for our DI friends like you, Kate, who might be working on some of those fine motor goals as well, that would be a way to work that practice into there. So you could make your own cage if you didn't
yeah,
have that.
Cute.
Yeah, another thing that I would do with zoo animals this week that would be pretty timely is hide zoo animals in plastic Easter eggs. Have you been doing your plastic Easter eggs this year, Kate?
I did them 2 weeks ago, and then I kind of took last week off, so I'm going to have to get them back out. They're still in my car, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to use them again this week. I kind of did them, and then I think I was burned out on them
yeah.
last week, and so now it's time to restuff them and get them back out.
Yeah, what are you putting in your plastic Easter eggs for your friends to locate?
Oh, I had animals. I had some funky balls. I had some stickers. I even put a little bit of candy in them.
Mm-hmm. So different little things.
Yeah, just whatever I could buy or what I had on hand. So.
Yeah, when I have had higher level kids that I really need to work on more traditional speechy stuff with, if I ever wanted to use pictures, Easter eggs are a fun way to do that, you know, and I'm not a huge proponent of using pictures with toddlers, but if you have flashcards or other kinds of pictures that you have the time to want to photocopy, and then you can fold them and put them in Easter eggs, and that's a much more fun way to target pictures than just to sit at a table with a kid or even on the floor and have them flip through pictures. If you have those pictures in Easter eggs and you're hiding the Easter eggs and you actually need to take a basket with you and then let him find the Easter eggs that you've hidden around the room and then sit down and open those and look at the pictures that way. And again, I think that's a much more fun activity, and it's more developmentally relative and appropriate to look at pictures in kind of that context, if you're that kind of therapist and if you're doing lots of that kind of therapy. I don't, but every once in a while I'll have a kid that I'll think, boy, he would think that would be fun, and that would be a way to target extra vocabulary that I might not have been able to do with real toys or objects. But, you know, the real thing is always better, in my opinion, rather than using a picture. But if I needed to, that would be the kind of way that I would use pictures, is with an activity that would be fun like that. So this week, another thing to do with zoo animals would be to hide them in Easter eggs and let your little client find them that way. Another fun way that I think that's always fun, that's kind of like using the sand, is to use something that can be the pond or the lake or the, you know, sometimes I'll just call it a pool for kids, especially if their family has a swimming pool or they go to the swimming pool a lot, and I'll think that that's a relevant vocabulary word that we need to start to practice. But any little bowl or something that you can put just a little bit of water in and let those zoo animals swim and do some things. Water is always a big hit with toddlers, don't you think so, Kate?
Boy, is it ever. Although I will caution, sometimes once you introduce it, that's all they want to do. I have a couple kids right now that do not forget it, and they're like, yeah, let's get the water. Usually I break the rule, my rule, with baby bottles that open and you can put water in there, and once you do
yeah.
that, you'll never play babies without water again. So, yes,
you
they love water.
Yeah, and that's a fun thing to do. And to practice, you can have the animals drink it. They can swim in it. They can take a bath in it. They can splash it. And again, if you're not going to want to do that in every home where moms might get upset about the mess, but I've hardly had a mom who's freaked out too much about it. And it is always fun. And I like to save those kinds of activities for, say, the last 15 minutes or so of therapy when you've done pretty much every other thing you could do and you're about to lose a kid, to bring out water or the sand activity at that time really hooks them, and they want to come back, and they'll end up staying with you the rest of that session when you might have lost them had you introduced it at the beginning. Sometimes, like you said, you'll introduce it and you can't really get them to move on to anything else because they like it, or they get kind of wild or whatever, but if you save it for that last 15 or 20 minutes of therapy, sometimes it'll stretch and you'll make it, you know, you're ending up putting it up because you have to go, your time is over. So that's just a little trick that I've learned too. If there's something that you think they're really, really, really going to love and it's a kid that with some attention challenges, save it, you know, past when they've done everything that they would normally do with you, and then use that as your last way to get them, your last activity for that. I think Play-Doh is lots of fun with zoo animals too, because you can make the zoo animals, again, you can pretend like you're making food for the animals. You could have the animals, it's always kind of fun to introduce two things that you might not think of using together, but having the animals try to walk on the Play-Doh. Again, you can make a blue one and pretend like it's the water. You can have green and pretend like it's the grass, and they're going to eat it, and they're going to go night-night in the grass and run in the grass and jump in the grass and all the different things you could do, too. So Play-Doh is really fun with zoo animals, and a lot, I do like introducing two kinds of toys that a mom might not have thought about playing together. So that's another fun thing that she might want to try with those zoo animals.
A lot of times, Laura, I'll just interject. Although, as I hear you ramble through all these, I think, man, I got to step up my game. I need to do some more, a little more variety here. But I have found when I am enterprising and I do some of those things, a lot of times, you know, if you just use Play-Doh or you just use the animals, they might like it kind of, but when you do, it's almost like kids recognize, like, oh, this is really funky and different, and it really kind of re-energizes their interest in both things, particularly if you've done both things separately. Kids seem to really like that, so it buys you a lot more, focused play from them, and like you said, particularly when you're losing them, those are great things to have in your arsenal to pull out and say, okay, you thought you were done with me, but look what we're going to do now. And they come right back to do it.
Especially if they're older, and especially if you've seen them. And older to us, again, is 2.5. And I guess school-age therapists that would hear us call a 2.5-year-old older are, you know, chuckling right now because they're not thinking about that. But as early interventionists, if we get a referral for a kid before they're 2, and then you've seen them and they're rolling around closing in on that 3rd birthday, sometimes coming up with new ideas and new toys that you haven't done already in your previous, you know, 50 visits to their home. You got to bring out something new or use toys in a new way. And so you're exactly right about putting those things together that mom may not have thought of before, that the kids never thought of before. And it does kind of stretch your imagination too. And, you know, it gives you new things to talk about, new ways to play. And I love to see what a kid would do with that, because so many of my little friends come up with new ideas that I think, oh, my gosh, that was such a great idea. Why didn't I think about that? Thinking about a little girl a long time ago. Her name is Isabel, and she always used to want to make trees, and so we made trees for animals to eat and jump over and hide in, and, you know, all kinds of things. And she was a kid that was apraxic that couldn't do an E for a long time, and so that was a great way. Yeah. We had to make another tree, and of course to her it was tea, but that's okay.
That was a lot closer than she'd come up until that point, I'm sure.
Yeah, and so it was a great way to work in her sound practice. It was pretty creative. Her mom had not thought about playing in that way. And again, she was a little girl that I saw for a while. Smart little girl, so she would, you know, really sometimes want to play with something. If she had seen it before, and if we had played with it before, it might last 10 minutes. But if she had played with it a lot, it might not last a minute or two. So I was trying always to come up with more creative ways to play, and ways that I could challenge her, and ways that she would want to stay with me. So that would be, you know, another way that you could use those darn zoo animals with that. Okay, those were 7 different ways. Kay, do you have any that I failed to mention? Let me mention one more that I've forgotten about.
Okay.
Using a book or a puzzle, if you have kids that are sick to death of books and puzzles and who don't want to do it, and again, I understand why, because developmentally, I think sometimes we have the unrealistic expectation that a 2-year-old should like books and a 2-year-old should want to do books, and he should be able to sit through that. And that would be fine unless his therapist took 7 or 8 different books and if she didn't think that's all they were going to do the whole time. And I really have seen therapists that are going to walk in to do a visit with a kid, you know, with 2 books and 1 puzzle and think that's going to last the whole hour, and that is just boring. And so I don't really do that. If I interject a book at all, it's usually with a kid who loves books. But if you have a child that's not really liking books that much and you do start to want to move him to be able to tolerate pictures, because, you know, that's how we test kids as speech pathologists, is they have to be able to identify some pictures. Matching is a really, really fun way to use the book, and it's not as boring as sitting there and reading. So if you had a zoo animal book and your zoo animals, you might have all the little zoo animals there in a box or a bucket or something, and the task for therapy would be that you look, find a picture in the book, and then you match it with the actual animal sitting right there. My little Kelly that I'm currently seeing right now, that I've just had a ball seeing this kid, that's how we did a lot of initial interest in books, because her foster mother wanted her to be able to read. She had never seen a book in her life. She hated it. As soon as it would come out, you know, she just had no interest in wanting to sit and cuddle and do that. And so we needed kind of a bridge activity, and that's one of the ways that we got her to start to like books, is to do some matching with some, not with pictures, but with real objects that match the photograph in the book. So that would be a cool way. You could do that with puzzles too, with kids that were sick of puzzles. And you have a set, you have a couple of your puzzles that you have the real objects to match the puzzle picture, right, Kate? I've seen you do that before.
I have vehicles, and I do actually have zoo animals with, and then of course farm animals. I have all the, those are just things that, they didn't come that way, but over the years I find an alligator, and it was the perfect alligator that matched the picture. And so,
yeah,
I'm very cautious about losing the pieces, but yeah, and sometimes they will. You know, if you, I usually try and get them to do the pieces and then let them match the actual animal, because they would prefer to do the animal. So if I'm trying to get them to get to the motivated to work on a puzzle, and I'm never a stickler about, you have to do all of them. I mean, I try.
Me either.
And if they put the brakes on, then okay, the real tiger comes out, or the real alligator, or whatever it
is. Right.
And let them move on to something they're more interested in. You know, Laura, on that book thing, I've had, when you say kids who love books, I've had a number of kids, and the girl that you kind of consulted on, for, you know, related to last week's show, she's a book lover, but because I think I never really, books are not ever my go-to thing, what I have seen for me is even those kids who really do like books, with mom, you know, bedtime or whatever, when I try and get books out, they're like, no, it's supposed to be more fun than that. And I always think, well, you love books, but they don't associate me with books, and rarely do I have much success. And I think I probably self-sabotage because I don't start there, but I just don't think they're, you know, even kids who really love books, they don't seem to be a big motivator for talking unless they're good talkers in the first place. I mean, this, you know, don't damn Chad, lots of kids who do love books. I mean, parents report that, oh, she loves to read books. And I say, well, does she ever label anything, or have you had any luck getting her? No, they're interested, and they're undoubtedly learning, but they're not talking.
I really use books more receptively than I do expressively. And I'll go through periods when I might have 6 months and not use a single book with a kid. And then I'll get 2 or 3 kids in a row that I'll think, okay, I've got to work on this specific thing, and books will work. And because I've taken the time right now to match objects for several cute books with photographs that I have some kids that have liked that. And Kelly actually loves doing that now, because you know, she didn't like books at all, and then she thinks that game's kind of fun. And then now what I do with those matching is we put the objects on the other side of the room, and I tell her it's a race. And so she's got to run, find the picture that I show her, and I make it a really big deal about And now I don't even really say what it is. We're using it kind of as a bridge for more auditory processing thing. You know, oh, look, here's the baby. Oh, she needs to drink. She wants a drink. Go find her something to drink with. And so it's almost like we're doing object functions and, again, higher level receptive language stuff rather than just labeling, rather than just naming things. You know, it's
but
a lot more.
You've added extra stuff. You've added movement.
Right.
And just a book.
Yeah. Yeah, just
know.
To sit down and read.
Yeah, even if they love them, they just sit and listen, which is great if it's bedtime, but if you're trying to get them to say words, I don't really see
it's too passive.
Right.
Yeah, I use it really almost everything that I do now with books is receptive. Uh-huh. You know, and it is a fact that we do test children with pictures, especially speech pathologists, and they do, as they're moving toward three, they do need to be able to do it. But is it my go-to number one therapy activity, and do I do it with every single kid every single week? Heck no. Only when I think, okay, we've got to get some extra practice here. The other valuable thing that you can use a book like that with in therapy is to teach mom how to do something besides just let it be so passive and give her some different ideas and some different ways to use books, because lots of times parents do think you're just going to sit down and read Once Upon a Time, blah, 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 without using a book in any other way. And I tell parents all the time, too, before you expect her to be able to label these pictures, she's got to be able to do it receptively. So I think books are a great receptive language activity. You know, even beyond the general naming, you know, where's the baby, where's the car, where's the ball, but you know, to move it on with other kinds of parts of speech, you know, show me who's running, show me who's sleeping, show me who's driving, or, you know, that might be even not a great target for a kid who's first starting to do verbs. But you know what I mean. You can use it receptively for lots of different things like that. Identifying parts of an object. You know, that's one of our indicators on our test. Unless you practice with an object and practice with some pictures before a kid is supposed to be able to do that in a testing situation, he's not going to know how to do it. He can't find the wheel of the car or the window on the house if he's never had that exposure. So you've got to be able to kind of build those activities in. But books are not, again, something that I think either one of us use frequently. And when I use it, it is pretty much a receptive thing, and it's pretty much to show mom how she can use it. And, again, for me, it's almost always helping a kid tolerate it rather than it's an activity that he absolutely loves to start with.
Right.
But I never just sit and read it to read. That's boring. You know, boring, 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 and I would never want to do that. But, it is a good bedtime activity. And that's,
absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, and you want mom to be able to do that.
I encourage you reading but on any means.
Yeah.
I just, like I said, I think when I've tried it, when I try it, sometimes it's too far, and they know me too well, and they know I have fun toys, and I generally keep it pretty upbeat and lively and playful.
Right.
And I get out the books, and they're like, nope, done, you know, nope, not going to do that. I do that at
what
night.
What else you got in that bag?
Yeah.
But you could use it, too, if you use it more creatively and match the things with it. Or you do this all the time with books, Kate, when you use them. You know, kiss the baby.
Yeah.
Pet the dog. You know, show me how that kitty cat could lick. You know, anything silly that you could do with the book, too. Especially for a kid, those kinds of activities are good for those kids who are just page turners. Who they like, their moms tell you they like books and they like reading, and then you look at them and all they're doing is flipping the pages. They're not even really attending to what's there. And so for those kinds of kids to do the, you know, tickle the, you know, horse or whatever, those kinds of little actions where you're getting them to look at the picture and to, you know, follow a receptive language command, those kinds of things are fun. And those are things that would be worth doing in therapy and worth using your therapy time for, too, is to help a kid learn how to use a book more functionally in that situation.
Right. And I do those things. It depends on the child, but I just find that in general, usually it's kind of a hard sell. But it can be done with the right child.
Yeah, and with the right, you know, the right approach and stuff. And again, I'm not going to take 7 or 8 books, and that's our whole therapy session. You know, that's no way. And you're right about kids expect differently from high energy play kind of therapists. They do think, no way are you getting away with that with me. Come on now.
Right. Yeah.
That's something I do with mommy at bedtime.
I know how you normally act. That is not going to cut it. It's funny how they can put the brakes on you so quickly if they know you well. And I think if I started on day one with the books, but generally
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, and I don't start on day one with books either unless I'm, you know, the only thing I would be doing is if it were kind of a testing thing and seeing what a kid could or couldn't do. All right, we're about 7 minutes from the end of the show, and I think we've talked about everything possible with those darn zoo animals. Do you have any parting words for Miss Emma, who might have listened to us for these ideas for the zoo? I think we gave her lots of new things to try.
She had tons of great ideas, Laura. The only thing I would add, and you pretty much said this, or you did say this in your email back to her, was that, you know, one thing she didn't provide you was a lot of information about where, you know, she said the child likes zoo animals. She'd like to use zoo animals to try and get phrases. And you kind of said, you know, tonight you talked pretty much in depth about what the prerequisite skills are for working on phrases and et cetera. But when you emailed her, you said maybe you need to do more general words but use the zoo animals. And I don't know that we really said that.
That's a good point. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, what you said was, and let me say, and I've learned this from you, so I know I'm not speaking out of turn. When you're working on phrases, you do want to use words that they already have in their single word vocabulary, and a lot of times those are words like mommy, daddy, go, eat, more, done, up, down, you know, all those simple ball, shoe.
So it
may be that as she uses those zoo animals, I mean, I'm assuming if this child does in fact say alligator and zebra and rhinoceros and giraffe.
He would probably already be saying phrases if he were saying
that. He'd be beyond
that,
right. I mean, it just doesn't, I mean, it could be, but is it likely? No. I mean, you know, generally when kids have those words, they are beyond, they're using phrases because they can sequence those more complex words and they can say, go bye-bye, more juice, you know, the simple two-word phrases because that's really as complex as some of those words. So anyway, what you said and what makes sense is if, in fact, this child doesn't have those single, you know, she can't or he can't, I don't know what the gender was, but if the child can't say giraffe or zebra or any of those, call one a daddy, call one a baby, call one a sissy, call one a bubby, whatever the Australian term, I think maybe those are Kentucky terms, sissy and bubby, which I do now use, thank you very much, but kids know them here, whatever the easy term for sister and brother might be in your area, talk about eating, talk about night-night, talk about whatever. Use props, use things that they can label. Get a ball, a little, you know, rubber ball out. Get a shoe out. Get a hat out. So you can say, hat on, hat off. You know, sit down, eat more. So simple words, that because chances are, unless this is really just a kind of a fluky kid, that I can't say I've seen one who didn't have phrases. And again, I've already acknowledged I don't do a lot of zoo animals, but those, as you say, are generally hard words. Snake might be the one kind of simple thing I could think of. And snake's universal. The kids love snakes, so I tend to do those kind of regardless of what they actually, you know, whether it's... I guess my opinion is there's a snake on a farm, so that counts, you know. Kids know what snakes are. But, so, you know, if he doesn't have those words to back it up and just use the everyday words that she's heard him using that work into his everyday routine that she's worked on and he's mastered and he has them, because it's really setting the bar pretty high if she's using a novel word with even a well-rehearsed or a word that he's mastered, you really want to stick
to do phrases, yeah.
Right. You really, for most kids, and it's what she said, he's 2.5, a little over. You know, obviously,
2-9.
Yeah, language isn't coming that easily, or she wouldn't be targeting that at this age. So probably, you know, my first instinct was You think he's really ready for the zoo animal names? I'm doubting that. Maybe, but probably not.
Yeah, and she may just be able, she may really kind of didn't think about those prerequisites, so that's why I wanted to start with that. And I'm so glad you brought this up, because I did write it back to her in the email, but I did neglect to say it when we were talking about it. She could use those zoo animals, but call them more generic words if he's not able to do that, especially if her overall goal is to increase his utterance length to phrases rather than single words. But I hope that Emma will hear the show. She said she's a frequent listener, that she would hear the show and then let us know what happened and give us some follow-up. I always want to hear follow-up. Sometimes we get follow-up, and sometimes we'll get follow-up like weeks or months later, and then I'll think, I don't even really, you know, I barely remember doing the show about it or talking about it. So hopefully Emma will let us know how this went. And maybe she had some different ideas that she used that I didn't mention. That would be good. I think it is hard to make yourself continue to be creative, though, with play. And sometimes we get stuck in our same routines with our toys or our same, same little bag of things, and we don't think about how we could combine toys and make it more fun and more exciting and more creative. And that's, you know, the focus of the book that I've been working on. So that's why this idea was so fresh in my mind too, because I've just written about it and written about using materials and combining
them
together.
When I say you wrote the book on that, I really see that. How do you be sarcastic? I shouldn't hold myself to such a high standard. I try and do it right, but I didn't write the book. But I'll tell you what, Laura, it's good that we do this because it motivates me. And I'm going to go to my garage after the show, and I'm going to find my zoo animals that I do, in fact, have. I just don't use much, and I have a bin of sand down there. And I'm going to...
Sand is fun, and the water. Yeah, using, you know, and maybe, you know, this week you'll use sand for a week or two, and then maybe not play with them for a week or two, and then the next time you take them back, you take, you know, the water with them instead of the sand before, and then switch it up, and then several weeks from now take Play-Doh with it. So, yeah, I think keeping kids kind of on their toes that way, and moms love that. When they see, oh, my goodness, I can't believe you thought to use it like that. You know, they're always kind of looking for new ideas, and it makes them want to participate in therapy that much more when they think, wow, she planned this session. She actually thought about what she's going to bring. Boy, that's creative. That's fun. Yeah. They want to hang around and see what you're going to do, too. Yeah.
Well, Laura, I haven't shared this with you. This is my closing comment. Not because I had anything to do with it, but my daughter decided that I should have the podcast on my phone. Little did I know that an iPhone is also an iPod. Okay, I didn't even know that, but apparently it is. And she has downloaded every show, and then she insisted on playing one, and I had to say, okay, that's enough. I don't really want to hear it. I just hate to speak myself. So I have them on my phone, though, and she did do it pretty easily, so I know it can be done, but...
So that's why our 8,700 subscribers on, the iTunes, that's what they're doing, I guess, is putting it on their iPods and on their phones, too. So that's funny you have that fancy iPhone and you didn't realize that you could do that.
Oh, I had no idea. She's like, well, Mom, if you have an iPhone, it's an iPod. Oh, okay.
Johnny is really snickering about this. He's figured out what you said.
Well,
he wonders how we even do this job, you know.
I had all 109 or however many podcasts we've done on my phone, and she was trying to get me to listen to some. I'm like, no, please, no. I'll do them, but
it's torture for you to listen.
I really hate the way I sound. I don't know.
Yeah, you ought to watch yourself for hours and hours of
I wouldn't like that
video
anymore.
Clips
that
for
would
the DVD.
Be worse,
yeah,
I just critique myself to death, so. I can
oh,
do
gosh,
it. I just don't
want
to endure listening. I like listening to you, but whenever I talk, Greta, my daughter, of course, tries to be complimentary, but I'm like, yeah, great. I do not sound good on there. So I have them, though.
I don't listen anymore. I listen every once in a while, and if I think something was really bad, I'll listen. You know, I'll think, oh, my goodness, I worded that terribly, or I was totally incoherent or whatever. And I'm always much harder on myself than I would need to be. So I usually go back and listen and think, okay, not so bad. I'm just going to let that go. So I listen occasionally, but not very often.
I rarely do anymore. I did in the beginning, and I decided I really don't like the way I sound. I don't like what I say. I really don't want to.
Oh, my gosh.
Well.
Well, you're great, or else it wouldn't
Laura,
have
we've already
this
established
long, believe
I'm
me.
Not the natural speaker of the duo. I can't get a word out in front of more than three people, so how ironic that I find myself doing this, but I only manage because I just think of it as a conversation between the two of us, which I can do.
And
but
that's all it is.
The thought
that's
of
all
anybody
it is.
Listening is just really kind of terrifying to me. So.
Well, you can just keep pretending.
That's what
fine.
I do. Just a little conversation about therapy.
We are at the end of this show, and I'm glad we made it through in light of how silly I've been today. So hopefully our listeners have gotten some different ideas and maybe challenged them to think about their own materials that they're using a little bit, and hopefully they'll have some really creative sessions in the next couple of weeks by thinking about what they can do differently. And hopefully we helped our listener Emma out too. So that's all for this week.
I'm going to dig out some old stuff and retool my play stuff and do better this week. So thank you for me.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.